Dr. Tommy Wallace, Superintendent of Bryan Schools, joins us. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. Where'd you go to high school?
Canyon, Texas, up in the Panhandle, okay. Near Amarillo.
Because, you know, we had a story yesterday, and I promised I was going to ask you this. We had a story about how kids have too much homework now. And I'll pull it out here in a minute. So what kind of student were you?
I was a B, C student.
Okay.
I wasn't like my own children. They got that from their mother. They're A students, but I was a B, C student.
How old are your kids?
I've got one 15 at Bryan High School, and I've got one 13 at Sam Rayburn.
Okay, all right. Oh, there's the superintendent's kids. Okay, yeah. But they're A students, huh?
They're A students. Yeah. They do a very good job. They work hard.
What was your worst class?
Worst, I would probably say, and this is going to sound bad, it was probably math.
Okay. But there are people who like math and people who don't. I mean, and it's...
It's really funny that now that I'm older, I actually enjoy math better.
So do I.
Because I see it more as a puzzle.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas when I was in school, I saw it as torture.
Yeah, I hear you. No, that's exactly... Now, here's the story. Let me see. In the study, parents reported first graders were spending 28 minutes on homework each night versus the recommended 10 minutes. Apparently, the National PTA says the 10-minute rule. So 10 minutes for each grade level, I guess.
That's correct.
So I don't know. How do y'all address that? How do you discuss that?
What we try to do is we talk with our building principals, and we try to get it to where we organize it, where it's maybe one subject more one night, one the other night, and it's about coordination and planning. Elementary school, a little bit easier because you're self-contained most of the time. High school gets a little tougher because you've got to coordinate that with seven different classes. So we try to keep it to a minimum. We don't want to just bombard a student with homework all night long. There's enough stress with state-mandated testings in schools as it is, but we want the homework to be very meaningful. We want it to be life-applicable. A while ago, when you asked about math, when I did it, it was just drill and kill math.
Right.
Today, they're actually using things like life application. Hey, if you have this amount of money and then you spend this much on a car, how much do you have left? It's more life-applicable for our kids now, where I think I would have probably enjoyed that more than when I grew up, because at that point it was more rote memorization.
I got numbers from the TEA. These are statewide, and I kind of just, as a superintendent in Texas schools, I'd kind of like to get your thoughts. Anglos, 20 years ago, 47% of the school population. Now it's 29.5%. Hispanic was 36%. Now it's 52%. African American was 14%. Now it's 12.5%. Number of kids in school has gone up 40% in 20 years. Now, off the top of your head, 52% is the statewide average. Where are you in Bryan?
52% as far as the Hispanic, we are 53%.
Okay, and then Anglo is 29.5%.
And Bryan is 22.
Okay, and African American is 12.5.
We're about 20.
Okay.
22.
So part of what's interesting is I see that, and what you've said in Bryan for a long time is true. The picture of your school district is different than the picture of College Station or a lot of other school districts.
Sure.
But what it seems to be is a picture of what Texas is starting to look like.
Correct.
So the challenges that other school districts are having are things that y'all have been introduced to and been forced to confront in years past. So how do we change? What do we do? How do we prepare?
Well, what we've done, and our board was really great to increase our bilingual stipend, because if you look, we have 22% of our students are ELL versus College Station at 8. And so as a result of that, some things like that, we've got to get teachers in front of our students that look like them, that can communicate with them, and we can educate them in bilingual education. So we have actually increased our stipends this year with board approval from $3,500 to $6,000 a year. And so the reason for that is we want to bring in the best quality teachers that we can possibly bring into Bryan ISD. And as a result of that, we're going to have to look at a compensation and looking at pay and looking at how we do business in terms of what we're spending money on, and making for sure we're putting as much, even more money back into the classroom as we possibly can. But the demographics are changing. We're 75% economically disadvantaged, which means 3 out of 4 of our students are on free and reduced lunch. So you have a poverty issue there as well. And so, again, looks a lot like the state.
So if I'm one of these teachers, I'm desired by a lot of school districts. I'm thinking I'm going to get to start naming my numbers. And so how does Bryan compete in that situation, because you know that you're going after people that a whole bunch of other school districts who have more money maybe are going after. So what are you going to do there?
Well, that's where you go into our wellness plan that we just had. The board adopted with the city of Bryan, our wellness clinic to help our employees. It'll be open from 7:30 to 5:30. Our stipends, we're adding more in our stipends. We're looking at what we call the best plan, our new compensation plan. We've tried to implement that this year, but with the funding the way it was, we just can't do it yet. There's not enough time to look at the finances, so we can't do that. So we're looking at, if you're in a more difficult school, a school that has higher poverty, a school that has higher economically disadvantaged, we're looking at maybe adding stipends to those individuals. So we attract teachers to those inner city types kids, inner city schools, but the best and the brightest for those kids as well, because they come to us behind. They come to us maybe one-parent families. They come to us with some poverty, and we need the best and the brightest at both the affluent and the economically disadvantaged, but those kids need to be pushed, brought up, and challenged even more.
Dr. Tommy Wallace, Bryan superintendent with us. Okay, so is there an initiative for superintendents to start telling Austin, hey, you got to give us a little more time here?
There's been an initiative with this grassroots effort that we've had with the consortiums across districts, across Texas, to tell lawmakers, you've got to help us out. You've got to really fund us differently. You've got to look at districts that are more economically disadvantaged. All the research shows and tells you that students of poverty need more experiences. It's not that they're not capable. It's not that they don't have the brain or the intellect. It's really experiences. They don't have those experiences. In a classroom I was in, I won't tell you which one, but they were talking about maritime activities, which, you know, for maritime being sea. Well, I walk in and I hear it, and I automatically hear the seagulls, and I see the ships. And I saw the kids in the class kind of looking, and the teacher did a great job discussing maritime activities. And I just, out of curiosity, said, hey, I've got a question. How many of you guys have been to the ocean? And 22 kids in the class, four raised their hand. Mm. So when you have economically disadvantaged students, what you wind up having is not lack of intelligence or lack of desire. It's lack of it's experience. They don't have the experiences that some more affluent schools and parents have.
So no matter what the reason, though, those kids lose interest in education, too.
They struggle with it, and you've got to make it more engaging, and you've got to make the classrooms more fun, and you've got to bring in technology, and you've got to bring in some types of rubric-type grading where they can decide on their own and own their learning. I want to do this for an A, or I'll do this for a B. Let them own a little bit of their learning versus just give them worksheets and move forward.
What does that mean? Explain that to me.
Okay. Well, if you look at the research, what you do, a lot of our kids, well, what they'll do is they'll say, well, I just want to get by. I want to make a 70. Well, what you do is in these rubrics, you can say, these are the following, this is what you have to have a 70 or a C. This is what you have to have a B, and this is what you have to have an A. What they wind up doing is you find out that the A is not much more work than the C, and they go ahead and do the A work, and you challenge them even more that way. And mm-hmm. they own their learning, and they choose it, and they look into it, and it really is very successful because they always do the A work anyway.
We got off on a sidetrack. We probably need to go back now to your teachers for a minute, because the numbers that we have as far as turnover in BISD, mm-hmm. higher than the state average, up to 26% based on 2 years ago. That is an addressable question. I think a lot of people are concerned when you have that kind of turnover. You've explained in the classroom what those problems are, but let's hear what else. What is it environmentally that possibly is making teachers not want to stay at Bryan?
Well, I don't think it's they don't want to stay in Bryan. I think that we are living in a community that you can go right next door. It's a whole lot easier. When I say easier, I need to clarify that. That's not the challenges that we have here in Bryan ISD. And then you have the pay is relatively the same. We also, as you look, about 80% of the 20 that you're talking about, they leave the community completely. They completely take off. For example, we have A&M, which is a great resource to have here in Bryan College Station. But as the teachers come in, they're here 2 years, and they're out the door. For example, at a new teacher orientation, I asked a couple teachers, there were four of them, and I said, hey, what brought y'all to Bryan? I'm glad to have you. And they said, well, our husbands are two of them working on their doctorates, one in physics, one in biochemical something, and the other two working on their master's thesis. And I said, oh, well, how long's the program? Oh, it's 2 years. I said, well, what are you going to do then? And they said, well, then my husband wants to go. And I'm, okay, so in 2 years, I've already lost four teachers because you've got that flow through. And the people in this community, whether it's Bryan, College Station, you have that issue of turnover that you go through because of Texas A&M being right here, and then them waiting on a spouse, them waiting on a significant other, then they leave. So most of ours leave the community. And, of course, we look at every exit survey. I read every one of them. And as I look at the numbers and find the reasons why, we ask them, are you – and this is totally – they can be brutal as they want to. And most of them will all say, I would come back to Bryan. We're moving. We're going to Dallas. We're going to Houston. A lot of them have left to go to the Houston area. They can stay here and go. The Houston starting salary is $52,000. Ours is $42,000. They make a lot more money. So there's several variables, and we're working on all those to try to figure it all out.
Money is a problem. I don't want to get too far out in the weeds, but I'd like for you to discuss a little bit because your school board looked at raising the tax rate by 2 cents, chose not to. I'm a Bryan taxpayer. I pay school taxes.
Yes, sir.
I personally would be in favor of that because it sounds like there's money waiting in Austin. Now, aside from them deciding not to do that, explain to me how there is money in Austin that if we raise the tax rate by 2 cents, you could get it.
Sure. Okay, back, I guess it would have been 4 biennials ago, they lowered the tax rate from $1.50, and the highest you could go is $1.04.
Okay, why did they do that, and why did they set it at that?
That was the business franchise tax that they said they would eventually help the districts get back to, and they haven't,
right,
by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it was to help businesses and the business franchise tax. So the highest that you can go in a district currently is $1.04 per $100 worth of property value. But from $1 to $1.06, the state has said that you can have what they call the golden pennies.
Mm-hmm.
There are 6 pennies. So from $1 to $1.06, you get the Austin yield. So the Austin yield is about $1.5 million per penny.
Okay, now what is that Austin the government or Austin the school
ISD.
District?
I'm sorry,
okay.
Austin ISD.
Now, why did they choose Austin ISD? Do you have any idea?
We do. It's a higher tax bracket. They have that's one of the highest in the state of Texas.
Okay.
And so they're saying we want to equitable, make it equitable, so we're going to give you at 6 cents. They called the golden six pennies at the Austin yield. So that's $1.5 million a penny. Bryan's pennies are where we get $660,000 per penny. So there are 2 pennies out there that are golden that we have not gone out for a TRE.
What does that mean? What is a TRE?
Ratification election. It's a TRE. That's what it's for. A tax ratification election. And as a result of that, Bryan has not done that. It's been on the table for many years. We've discussed it over time.
Didn't you come in and say this day one? I mean, when you looked at it, you had to see that it was out there.
Sure.
Did you ask your school board why they're not doing this?
We talked about it. We talked about it in finance and budget meetings and all that. We talked about it in board meetings. And at that time, they just didn't feel like it. We were ready to go out for an election.
Is it fair for me to call it matching funds, basically?
Oh, it's not matching funds. It's just additional funds.
Okay.
Because we're not matching, no matter what. We're not matching it. We're just receiving more from the state for those 2 golden pennies.
Well, so, this is a school district that needs money.
Now this is the first year we did adopt a negative budget of about $900,000. I don't think that will wind up being the final number because we are fiscally responsible. We watch very closely our monies. But this is the first year that we've had that. We're looking at different ways, energy efficiency, conservation of energy. But this is something we can maybe continue to have our discussions about. The reason that we decided not to go out for a TRE now is because it was any board member can put anything on the agenda, and it was thrown out there to talk about, to discuss. But before you go out, before I come speak to you and the public about a TRE, we need a plan. And we had not even discussed it up until that one board meeting at length and to the point to where we put it on a board agenda. And so it's just not the right time. I'm not saying that the board won't call for one soon, next year. But we need to have a plan because when you go before the taxpayers and you're asking them to give 2 more cents, we need to have a plan as to what that would be for and what that money will be used for. Sure. I, as a taxpayer myself, would want to know what the money is being used for.
Sure. Dr. Tommy Wallace joining us. New A through F grading system is going to start in 2016. The governor signed that. Under the bill, student performance on state standardized tests would remain a primary measurement, but there will be other things involved as well. This will do away with the needs improvement, MET standard, all that kind of stuff. What is your feeling about having that kind of a grading system, if you will?
Well, you know, we've had some type of a system to compare schools and school districts for years. The A through F is a little bit more concrete, but there are going to be more factors that are in there. I wish the district would get away from the fact that, or the states would get away from this A through F mentality. So you're saying one school is an A and one school is an F, and what's going to determine that? Is it one test on one given day? Are you going to put more weight and emphasis on what the community says about your schools and what the communities want? I mean, what's the rubric going to look like? And right now, they've passed it, but we don't know what the rubric will look like.
What they're saying is that part of this is also going to be how you, the district, is interacting with your community,
yes,
how many AP students you have, and those sorts of programs. So they really are giving you some milestones that you need to reach.
Well, they are, but what they're not telling us is what it is yet. So they've given us these brief synopsises like this right here. Yes, it's going to be a number of AP, community involvement, which is all the things we look at anyway. But we don't know what that looks like yet. So when you go to an F school, what does an F school look like? What's an A school going to look like? But there's always going to be accountability. Public education will never be able to run from accountability or an accountability rating. And so whether it's an A and F or MET standard or not MET standard, we're always going to have one. And in Bryan, we're just going to continue to do the best for kids and teach our kids and continue to engage community. And then whatever the rating winds up is what the rating winds up. But we'll be striving for that A.
Yeah. Dr. Tommy Wallace joining us. Truancy. Yes. Is another thing that they are making some changes, and I don't really want to go into a whole bunch of that, but basically, can you give me a picture of truancy and BISD from a number standpoint?
Sure. Last year, we filed in our district, I think, 750 cases to the county commissioner's court for students who were truant. The law previously...
County court at law, probably not county commissioner's court, am I right?
I'm sorry, county court,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you go through there, if you miss 4 days in a 6 weeks period, then you're given letters, warnings, and then you take individuals to the court, put them in the court system. What they're doing is they're decriminalizing the new truancy issues. They're decriminalizing and making more of a civil one, so more like a ticket. And so what they don't want is to have these individuals, these kids who have this criminal record on their, you know, the record forever. Mm-hmm. It's expunged at 18, mm-hmm, on their record until. So what they're trying to do is make it to where it's a civil. It's more of a ticket. The bottom line is, in Bryan, we need our students in school, whether it's Bryan, College Station, Navasota, Hearn, we need the kids in school. When you look at attendance rate and then you compare that to academic success, you're going to see a correlation. And the more kids are in school, the better off they're going to be academically.
You like the new law?
I don't like the way that... I don't like the law in terms of the way there's so much freedom as to where we go with filing truancy court, because right now we're working with the county court to find out who we're going to go with, which court or room or which precinct we file with. We'll be working with Dwayne Peters this week to discuss that. We've had some preliminary meetings.
Would you like to have a truancy judge?
It would be fantastic to have one person in the Brazos County that handled the truancy cases. Because what you have is you have different, College Station may go into one court, we may go into one court. It'd be fantastic to have one judge that heard the cases across the board. Of course, that goes back to resources for them as well. But we would love to have one. Judge Rick Hill has done a great job of helping educate our people, educate our district on a court and how this thing's going to work out. So we do a shout out to Judge Rick Hill. But we'd love to have one. Yes, sir.
Finally, let's finish up on the things that you've got going on with your bond issue. Of course, you passed a bond issue by a wide margin, 65%.
Yes,
where are we on the timeline of that? And remind people what we've got coming up soon and the other markers down the line.
Sure. We have just finished our 95% drawings for SFA. And so SFA, Stephen F. Austin, the old one, We're still having school in, and but the new one has already started. So we've started working in Civic Auditorium. We have raised or taken down the old building of the old CTE. And so we're about 95% drawings. They're working on it right now. We'll be in classes in 2 years. They're at the new SFA. Davila Middle School and the Merrill Green Press Box are at 95% drawings. We'll put them out to bid this month. And both of those will be finished hopefully by the, I'm guessing by the end of next summer. Davila. Now the press box will be done much sooner. Then we have our Sam Rayburn Rudder. We're working on all of those as well. The Ross Elementary School, which will be a brand new school in essence, they're at 95% drawings there. So we're about to put that out to bid. So you're really fixing to see a lot of dirt turning and a lot of steel going up. It's exciting times right now.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to mention we didn't talk about today?
Well, I'm really proud of what Brian has done. Going back to your comment about the scores. This past year, Bryan ISD had more AP type scholars through their AP, through their SAT, ACT scores than we've had in years. We had over 63 of those kids that had done very well academically. So we're extremely proud of not just educating those who are struggling and need an extra push, but also pushing and stretching those kiddos at the top that want to go to Harvard, want to go to Yale, Brown. And by the way, my son really wants to go to Brown. So
really?
He does.
He chose one of the most expensive schools. Okay, all right.
I wanted to just get through high school and make the top half, and he wants to go to Brown University.
Okay,
so,
right.
But no, we appreciate very much your support, and thanks for having us on today.
You bet. Thank you. Tommy Wallace, the superintendent of schools in Bryan.